Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians. All while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
And we're back for another day of Leading Edge Medicine, and not just a day, it is Veterans Day. So happy Veterans Day. Thank you for your service, Dr. Mixon. And we told people you weren't going to be here this week, and we were surprised. I was like, I saw his car in the parking lot. And I was like, yeah.
Like I said, I was expecting him last week, too.
Okay.
But, he stood me up.
Yeah, well, yes. About 10 days ago, my daughter, my 11-year-old, came down with a case of the gombu. And she generously shared it with her father.
Oh, nice.
And
sharing is caring, Dr. Mixon.
You know, and she was laid up and missed school for about 3 or 4 days.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, she was pretty sick. Mm-hmm. So, but then, of course, my 76-year-old immune system was not quite as robust as hers.
Oh.
And so I have been snotting and coughing and hacking and, you know, for the last week. So I spent last Saturday mostly sleeping.
Uh-huh.
I tried to listen to the show.
Uh-huh.
You were not boring, but, you know, about halfway through the first hour, I found my head nodding down on my chest.
So. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. So many questions I could ask
sharing.
Right now.
I know.
Yes.
Let's not go there.
No. But we have a full house today. Dr. Jerry Mixon back in his chair. Dr. Samira Umat is here. And we have our special guest, Dr. Michael Gilbert.
Good morning.
Yes. He is our eye specialist at Northwest Vision Institute.
Your alliteration, however, just brought back a distant memory to me.
You
said, doctor. Okay. When I was a resident, we had a doctor named Doctor.
Who
was a delight to hear him paged on the overhead.
Right.
You know,
doctor
to the ICU stat.
His like last name was Doctor.
Was Doctor.
Like D-O-K-T-E-R or something.
So
Doctor.
So Doctor, I think, was doomed to his profession from childhood on.
Wow. Maybe he was the inspiration for the song, Doctor.
That's right. Give me the news. That's right. Yeah. And then, of course, other names. I did once know an orthopedic surgeon in Salt Lake City named Dr. Bonebreaker.
Bonebreaker.
No.
Oh, my God.
I would have chosen a different specialty.
I would have, too. Yes. And then, of course, there was the dean's secretary when I was in medical school, a young lady named Lucy Lusty.
Oh, boy.
Wow.
Miss Lusty. Oh, boy.
And she was a married lady, but apparently she married a lusty young man.
That would be boy.
Keep your maiden name.
Well, we had a doctor with the last name of Hooker in our practice.
Oh, that's true. We did. He's the only Hooker I've ever hired.
Oh, wow.
Dr. Bo Hooker. Yes, that's right.
Wow. That's not a Hallmark movie at all, but I'm just imagining all sorts of things. Dr. Hooker, yeah.
Incredibly sweet guy.
Oh, he was a very nice man.
Bo Hooker was just a sweetheart of a human being.
Yeah, he was.
And I've heard of
everybody loved him.
So. Dr. Payne, I've heard of that one before.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, so
All
the doctors in the house on this Veterans Day Saturday. So, wow. I hope you have some stories for us to sprinkle in, Dr. Mixon. I bet you do.
Yeah, but I don't.
Okay, you don't right now.
Well, it's just Veterans Day, Memorial Day, 4th of July are difficult days for me. I find myself getting weepy at times, mm-hmm. you know. And, yeah, I remember last 4th of July, I was sitting out on the patio and waiting for our guests to arrive, and I was listening to some Sousa, music, very upbeat and cheerful, and they suddenly started to play Taps.
Uh-oh.
And I found myself sitting there with tears running down my face, and Bandine looked out the door and saw me, and she ran out and changed the music.
Wow.
Because there are things. These three holidays are the days that my ghosts come to visit.
Okay.
And you know, for a physician, I'm in kind of a unique position because of the work I did in the military. I was part of a team. Our job was to find and kill people our government told us needed to die. And so I'm the only physician I know who has purposely killed more men than you see in the average horror movie. And just because you have a uniform on, it doesn't become impersonal, and especially the way we did it, because I was close enough to see the light die in their eyes, you know, when I put a knife in their chest. So when things strike me wrong, I wake up at 2 a.m, and I am haunted not by the men I killed. We were soldiers. This was our job. They would kill me if they had the chance. My job was to kill them first. I am haunted by the families, the young wives who say, "Why did you kill my husband?" The parents who say, "Why did you kill my son?" The children who want to know why they had to grow up without a father. Those are my ghosts. And nothing I can say to them in the night satisfies them. And why would it? You know, I understand why they're never satisfied. But when I wake up in tears, Bandine holds me. So I have a different view of Veterans Day and Memorial Day and the 4th of July. On the other hand, had it not been for the extreme violence of my youth, I would have not become a physician. Because if anybody was set up for post-traumatic stress syndrome, it would be someone like me. And my reaction to that extreme violence was to swear that I never wanted to be part of harming another human being in my life. Mm-hmm. And I turned my entire life to medicine. And for 47 years, I have devoted every waking hour to improving human life instead of taking it. And so in some ways, my medical practice and this show where I talk to people and explain to them, you know, what we can and can't do and how we can help and try to offer guidance and comfort, in part, this is a partial expiation of my youthful sins. Mm. So... very personal. Sorry
yes.
about that. I hope I didn't offend anybody, but
no, it's a humbling story.
It really is. Yes. Yeah. Yes. All right. Well, thank you for sharing that, Dr. Mixon. So we may hear some Sousa music today.
Oh, please.
Just a little bit.
I hope so. Yes. John Philip Sousa is my favorite musician.
We will be playing him. Yes, absolutely today. Welcome, Leading Edge Medicine here, Dr. Jerry Mixon, Dr. Michael Gilbert here talking about eyes. If you have questions about your eye health, he is the one to talk to today. And of course, Dr. Samira Umat here as well. Let me give you that phone number so you can be the first one in. Phone lines are wide open for you at 800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. Okay, so Dr. Mixon, you've been down with the crud.
I have the gumbo, yes. The dread gumbo.
But I bet you've done a little bit of reading to see what's making news these days.
Yeah, and I've been maybe it's just because I am always a bit morose this time of year. But for reasons I think we've already recounted. but I have been distressed by the fact, I read that in Canada, 4% of every death in Canada were executions of the government by mentally ill or sick citizens. euthanasia. The government euthanized 4% of all the people in Canada who died at the hand of the government's euthanasia, which I thought was an appalling number.
I've not even heard of this.
4 out of every 100 people.
And, you know, Canada, of course, would never hear
and
of this.
And the Netherlands, which has always been very liberal with killing their citizens, has just passed a law this week extending euthanasia down to the age of 1 and extending it to people who are developmentally disabled. If you have a child who is limited cognitively, you can have them killed at the government's hand.
At now, age 1, they're making that, assessment, and then that decision.
Yeah, and it struck me that if a mass murderer goes into a school and slaughters 30 school children, he will not be executed, if ever, for at least 25 years while he gets appeal after appeal after appeal and legal protections. And, you know, and in this 25-year period, we'll put him in a housing facility with exercise and a college education and medical care, and he will be cared for at the taxpayer's expense for decades as a murderous scum, and we will kill a child quickly, easily, because they're not as smart as we think they should be.
Too much to handle. Can't deal.
I'm lucky to be here.
Same here.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, and, you know, as one of my adopted daughters, you know, I have had a total of 9 children. I 7 by birth and 2 by adoption. And one of my adopted children is cognitively impaired. She was found wandering in the streets of Seoul, Korea, unaccompanied, with large burns on her shoulders and arms, almost no hair, tiny, skinny thing. When we got her, we did her bone ages. We tried to figure out how old she was because there was no history. Her bone age said she was about 25 to 26 months old, but she only weighed 13 pounds.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, and that extreme starvation of her youth damaged her brain. Now, she is now in her, you know, early 40s, will never be self-supporting. I've set up a trust fund so that she will never be a bag lady, you know, and we did our best to raise her and give her every help that she could. But in the Netherlands, she just simply been killed.
You would have just gone. Would you have gone to the government to say, hey, this is what's going on, I can't handle it?
I don't know. There's a kid in Britain right now that has similar laws, and the parents are fighting tooth and claw to try to keep the child alive because the government has decided that
they want to deal with it. Oh, yeah. Boy.
That is just so bewildering when you have loving parents who
want to take care of you.
That the government would come against that.
Yeah.
And I have to confess, as I was listening to you, we've known about the Netherlands as long as I can remember. But Canada shocks me. I was doubtful. I just Googled it, and of course,
there it was.
I just looked it up on the internet.
Yeah, and there it was.
And 4.1% came up immediately.
Yeah.
Quite to my shock.
It's appalling. And so, you know, if I look at the disparity between the way the modern world will treat disabled children and the way we treat vicious, subhuman, murderous adults. It's just appalling, the contrast.
You know, I did my residency in physical medicine and rehab, and I used to consider myself a physician to the disabled population. You know, I've treated traumatic brain injury, stroke rehab, amputees, and they have enriched my life. All those people, how they manage, how they communicate, how they live. Such wonderful experiences throughout my training.
My disabled daughter, you know, Jin Bunyu was her original. She came from the orphanage with. Jin sat on daddy's lap and cuddled me, and she may not have been the smartest kid in my brood, but she loved and was capable of being loved.
And probably joyful, too, as you hear.
In many respects, Although, you know, I mean, her
what she could
she,
be.
She had older siblings that were near genius. Mm. You know, most of my kids have IQs that are at the high end of gifted. All right. And she saw the difference in herself and, you know, and my other children. Mm. And so that caused her difficulty, and she needed a lot of extra care and loving because there's no way for her to compete,
right?
You know, with my older kids.
Wow. Oh, wow. Some thoughtful and serious topics this morning that we started the show off with. We hope you'll join us with your questions with Dr.
Yeah, please call with some medical questions.
Yes.
Something cheerful, something happy, something we've helped you with.
We already have them lining up, and here's the number to get through. It's 800-465-8770. Carrie, we're going to talk with you in just a minute, and Dale, you too, but there's more room for you and your questions as well for Dr. Umat, Dr. Mixon, and Dr. Michael Gilbert today. 800-465-8770. We'll be right back. Senior, and he got most gifted music and talented, you know, all these awards. His name was John Souza.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, not Philip. Well, it was his younger brother, but he was John Souza. It was like,
Do you realize John Souza, though, who, John Philip Souza, who wrote all this glorious marital music, wanted to be a popular songwriter. He did not want to do band music.
Wow.
He actually wrote some of these as ballads to be crooned to your love.
Oh, my.
And it was his wife who convinced him to just pick up the pace and do what you do best.
Not working for me, dear. Right. Yeah, pick up the pace on that one. So, a little history there on this Veterans Day.
Remember, I thought I was going to be a musician when I was in high school. So,
okay, there we go. Well, good morning. We're back with Leading Edge Medicine. We'd love to take your calls today, 800-465-8770. We're going to start our day by talking with Carrie in Mount Lake Terrace. Hi there, Carrie, good morning.
Hello, Carrie. How can we help?
Well, this is an interesting one. I've been listening to a multi-part presentation by a doctor on dementia and Alzheimer's in particular, and he's talking about the role of something called plasmalogens in this. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, I do. The only peer-reviewed studies, though, that have actually shown improvement with overt dementia have been multifactorial. And the single biggest consistent finding was exercise.
Mm. Okay.
It's kind of fascinating. You know, when the guys down at the Buck Institute, Samira, what was the doctor's name originally?
Dale Bradison.
Yeah. When Dale Bradison published his first paper back in September of 2014, I absorbed that paper. I inhaled it. In fact, I got on a plane and flew down to California spend some time talking to Dr. Bradison. His 9-patient series had a wide variety of supplements. Mm-hmm. They had hormonal interventions. They had estrogen and testosterone and so on, as we frequently do. But they got different doses, different hormonal regimens. They got different supplement regimens. The only consistent thing they had that seemed to have a dose response effect was the amount of daily exercise they did. The ones who spent the most hours a day in vigorous physical activity were the ones that got the best cognitive improvement, which I thought was fascinating. The other stuff seemed to help, But the one consistent finding, and the ones that were the least physically active, were the ones that got the least improvement. Mm-hmm. Everybody on his program improved except for the person with the severe, the one person that had severe dementia.
Yes.
Because his brain was simply too badly damaged to recovery.
Wow.
Okay. But, you know, the things we can do for people that are not yet overtly demented are also fascinating. There is a study, for instance, on women in their mid-40s. These are all postmenopausal age women that were, the median age was 54 years of age. And they did some interesting things. They did a multivariable cognitive test looking at their short and long-term memory, their executive function, their spatial orientations, etc. And then they did brain flow studies. They put a transducer on the temporal arteries to take a look at what the transcranial blood flow was. And they found that menopausal women, as we have all known for decades, decrease the blood flow to their brain. That's why cognition in women consistently goes down in their 50s and 60s. You know, men also show a decline, but is not as dramatic as women around the age of menopause. That's a six specific. And part of it is due that their brain starts out smaller just because of the physical size. You know, men are bigger. So we have more volume that we can lose before we get impairment. But what they did was they put these people on two things. They put them on citicoline, which is a choline adder, allows them to make acetylcholine as a neurotransmitter in their brain more effectively. And that, within 3 months, improved their cognitive scores. But then they continued to improve over the course of the next year with resveratrol. And it turns out the resveratrol restored the blood flow to the brain to premenopausal levels. Mm. So at least with women that are having cognitive decline, measurable cognitive decline, citicoline and resveratrol will bring them back to premenopausal levels. Then another study that was looking at lutein and zeaxanthin, which are basically, they were measuring the amount of these pigments in their eyes. This is kind of interesting that we have you here.
Right.
They were using a device to measure the amount of the pigment in their eyes. And they put them on I think it was 1 milligram of the lutein and 10 of the zeaxanthin, or maybe it was reversed. And over a course of a four-month period, just raising those xanthines ended up improving cognitive function in both men and women that were in this stage of life. Mm. So there are things we can do if you find your cognition declining. But once you have developed overt Alzheimer's disease, the earlier you intervene, the better. But there, hormonal interventions, anti-inflammatories, wide variety of supplements, and physical exercise appear to be the most reliable things we've got to trigger the growth of all those growth factors for the brains. For instance, the brain-derived neurotrophic growth factor is produced almost exclusively in working muscle.
Right. And Jerry, you know, not to complicate the issue, but what about the APOE markers in this? Say they have inherited the four from both parents.
Yeah, well, and that's a problem. You know, if you're an APOE epsilon 4-4, you got a four from each parent, you got a 55 to 60% chance of being overtly demented by age 60. Fascinatingly, though, I saw a paper recently that stratified people by APO epsilon in the twos, the 2-3s, the 3-3s, and the 3-4s, and then the 4-4s. Mm-hmm. And they looked at these people and started running cognitive tests on them in their 30s. Mm-hmm. And they found there is a clear stratification. Even as early as your 30s, people with an epsilon 4 tend to have lower cognitive function even in their 30s.
Wow.
And the threes do better than the fours, and the twos do better than the threes. Mm. Now, I'm a 3-3, so
which is the most common.
Which is the most common. Mm. But, gee, I've often wished I was a 2-2. I could be smarter than I am. So.
Under average. Wait a minute.
Well, I'm 75 and 4-4.
That's a worry. that's great. But that means, and I don't know if you're a patient or not, but I'm going to tell you right now, my advice to you, get out and move. I want your muscles moving. Yeah. I want as much vigorous physical activity you are capable of as many days of the week as you are possible. Because those 300-plus myokines produced by working muscle have a lot to do with restoring the function in the brain.
And there was another item that this guy mentioned, which was the acetylcholine piece of this. And what he was saying is that part of the real problem, the significant problem, is the breakdown of the reuptake of the acetylcholine. And
that's
therefore
right.
You can't, the synapses don't work.
Yeah, and that is the problem with overt dementia. But everybody, as they age, our acetylcholine production and reuptake is impaired progressively just as a function of aging. Those of us that have normal age-related cognitive decline can turn it around. Mm-hmm. Those that are have overt brain disease, that's different.
Mm-hmm. The
Bredesen protocol is the best we've got, and it's not perfect, but it's the best we've got.
And I've got both of his books, so okay.
All right.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Take care, sir.
Good luck, Terry.
Wow. Yeah. Thank you for your call.
Yeah. So being an old man, this is an area close to my heart.
There it is. Okay.
Yeah.
We don't use the O word around
studio.
Here, Jerry.
Yeah, there's nobody old in this studio.
That's one of the rules in my practice, especially as I'm a senior physician.
Senior physician. There you go.
All right. We
are in the studio. We have Dr. Jerry Mixon with us, and we have Dr. Samira Umat, our special guest, who focuses on the eyes. See what I did there?
Yes, ma'am.
Boy, that's never heard that one before.
Love you as I do.
Dr. Michael Gilbert is here. If you've got question about your eyes, your dry eyes, your perhaps
macular
glaucoma.
Degeneration.
Yeah, glaucoma.
Oh, RLE is an exploding area.
In a good way.
In a good way.
Yes. And meibomian glands. Any of those things you've heard of and you've wanted to ask Dr. Gilbert about, this is your chance.
And no copay. How cool is that?
I know. Look at that.
And besides, Lynette just wants to say my boobie.
I just like to say that. And epicanthal folds. That's Dr. Mixon's.
Oh, my gosh.
I know.
Aren't you good at that?
I like
but can
the
you
big
spell
words.
It?
We'll get to that on the break, which we're going to take right now. 800-465-8770 is that number to get through. 800-465-8770. This is Leading Edge Medicine. We'd love to talk with you. Don't be shy. Give us a call, and we'll get you on with one of our doctors in just a moment. We'll be back. That's what the doctors are doing. They've got their computers out, looking up things, trying to find answers to your questions.
Even before they're asked.
Even before they're asked.
Creating questions.
I'm Lynette Morgan. Glad to be with you. Dr. Jerry Mixon in the studio. Dr. Samira Umat. And today, our eye specialist, Dr. Michael Gilbert from Northwest Vision Institute here to talk about the eyes as well. We're going to head to Briar. Dale is on the line. Hi there, Dale. Welcome.
Hello, Dale. How can we help?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. So clients at the Linwood Clinic, Dr. Cho, we love Dr. Cho.
She's a sweetie.
I've called you before. Yes. I have stage 4 prostate cancer. I've been on hormone suppression therapy for 2 years. And the last time we met with Dr. Cho, she brought up a couple of items that she was curious about your opinion of, and it was for rapamycin and for
dasatinib and quercetin.
If that would be appropriate for my condition.
Well, let me start with the dasatinib and quercetin. As we were just talking during the break, because everybody in this room is interested in rapamycin.
Yes.
And I do both the rapamycin and the dasatinib and quercetin. Because I do everything. What can I tell you? I'm a risk taker by nature. The senescent cell therapy with the dasatinib and quercetin extended the lifespan of the experimental animals 36%. Now, that's remarkable. I've never seen any other lifespan extending compound that got 36% improvement. Rapamycin averages around 12 to 15% in experimental animals. But the rapamycin is being dosed in kind of a strange way. See, normally when we give someone a drug, let's say I want to lower your cholesterol or I want to drop your blood pressure, I give you a drug and I use whatever dose I need to get the effect I'm trying to achieve. And then we look at the side effects that have been caused by that dose and we say, are these side effects acceptable to get the achievement that we're achieving? But we don't worry about getting side effects. We know there's going to be side effects. Everything we do has side effects. So the question is, what's the trade-off? In rapamycin, we are dosing it at low enough doses in an effort to completely avoid side effects. And I don't know any other drug we use that standard. We're trying to use a low enough dose that we do not see any adverse effects with it. Now, the reason that's kind of strange is because, A, we don't do it with anything else, but, B, in the experimental animals, the higher the dose we use, the longer the lifespan. And it's an almost linear relationship. Higher doses equal longer lifespans. But in people, we've cut the doses way down because we don't want to get any side effects. So it's a different approach. So the best numbers we've got with rapamycin are 12 to 15% extension in lifespan. Well, now, if the average human is going to make it to 80, a 15% extension would be another 12 years. That's certainly worthwhile. But wouldn't I rather have the 36% from the dasatinib?
Yeah, but Jerry, he also mentioned stage 4 prostate cancer.
Yes, and I'm getting to that because that is firmly in my mind because the dasatinib and quercetin are anti-neoplastic agents. These drugs are specifically designed to destroy cancers. Okay, now, it's not approved for prostate cancer, but we use it for hematologic cancers. So in a cancer patient, I would not be terribly concerned about using an anti-cancer drug in a patient who has cancer. Especially when it's got a history of showing that it often slows the growth of tumors and inhibits the further growth of cancers. Rapamycin is in a slightly different category. And that's because about 3 years ago, there was a Chinese study that showed that rapamycin increased the risk of prostate cancer. Now, rapamycin has decreased the risk of every other cancer that we've looked at. But the Chinese study said the one exception to that was an increased risk of prostate cancer. That then made us say, wait a minute, should this be used in men with prostate cancer? But last year, that study was recalled because of fraud.
So, imagine that.
So we've now got a...
Published in Wuhan.
Yeah.
So now we've got a study that was published in Nature. But so we've got one study that showed that the only cancer that rapamycin might make worse is prostate cancer.
Wow.
And that's what you got.
Mm-hmm.
But we also have that study that has been recalled.
Okay.
Right. So. But, you know, to your point and to see which one would be the best option for him, I guess if Dr. Cho wants to reach out, there is a published article in phase two clinical trials for dasatinib and senescent cell therapies in prostate cancer.
Yes, so, I'm familiar with that study.
Yeah. So we can send that link to her, and then she can talk to the to Dale
right.
personally and see. Jerry, what are you leaning towards more? Both or just one first and then add the other?
Well, since dasatinib has the best evidence that it actually helps, because the study you're referring to is not just on prostate cancer. It's on castrate resistant. These are the nastiest prostate cancers we know of that abolishing all of their androgens doesn't help.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, these are the most lethal, the worst cancers we got. And it appears in the early results that it's helping.
Right. Mm.
So I would start with that one.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the one that gives us the longest statistical lifespan extension.
Right, right.
The other one...
Okay.
The other one, you know, I'm not sure. They recalled the study.
Mm.
But I have not delved into what fraud was there and did it really impact the results, and are there any other studies that might cast more light on it? Because I just came across that recall about 10 days ago, and I've been tied up with some other stuff. So,
okay.
Well, anyway, that's where that lies.
You know what? Things that we really appreciate about longevity and Dr. Cho is, you know, she's obviously I have limited ability to do certain things treatment wise, and so she's always looking, searching. I know that you, Dr. Mixon, that's your goal too. And I, as a client, a patient, we really do appreciate that. And so we love being part of longevity, and hopefully Dr. Cho will keep working a little bit longer.
Oh God, I keep hope. So she's been threatening to retire for a decade, and she did retire briefly, and then I convinced her to come back.
She's a retirement failure.
Yeah.
Yes. But she was,
we know a couple like
she was
that,
only working 2 days a week, and then, you know, she's recently been telling me she might cut back to 1 day a week, and I'm saying, you know, I'm going to chain you to your desk.
You know, she's such a strong advocate for her patients. Mm. My goodness.
Yes.
She really does.
As a point of information, I did start, I can't think of it, the Chinese therapy with the needle, acupuncture.
Acupuncture
recently. Yeah, recently. Okay. And it's helped me with the temperature of the hot flashes, and it also helped me with sleeping. That's just a point of information that I'd like to share.
You know, I wish I knew what acupuncture was doing. You know, my first exposure to acupuncture was way back in medical school in the dark ages when Fred Flintstone and I sat next to each other.
And how did Fred do in
cheating off each other's tablets?
Yeah, that was the problem, was I couldn't read his chiseling.
But, yeah.
They showed us a film. One of our medical school instructors at University of Utah had actually been to China and watched and had filmed a major abdominal surgery under acupuncture anesthesia. And they just used acupuncture and actually opened this guy's belly and went wading through his innards, and he appeared to be perfectly comfortable. And I looked at that and said, okay, not my belly, buddy, but, you know.
Wow.
And so I am convinced, through the years, I've seen a lot of people use acupuncture for a lot of stuff. The theory behind acupuncture does not fit any system I have for how the human body works. Mm. Whatever it's doing it completely outside of my ken. Mm. I can't in good conscience say, go use acupuncture for this or that. But when somebody tells me acupuncture is working for them, I say, good.
Good.
I wish I understood it.
Right. Right. Well, it's not doing any harm either, no. Right? So if it's helping.
I don't know. The needles scare the hell out of me, but yeah.
Well, people swear by them. I've never had it done, but.
Or swear at them.
Yeah, true. That's right. That's right. Oh. So,
but are, yeah, you know, if the acupuncture works, the acupuncture works, but do me a favor. Encourage Dr. Cho to keep right on working, okay?
I had a Chinese ophthalmologist who worked for me for a time, and she actually did some acupuncture and offered to bring it into the clinic. So we had some discussions on it. Would have been very exciting, cutting edge for sure. And on the other hand, much like you, I don't understand it.
Right. Yeah.
So,
and I like to understand what I'm doing.
A large percentage of me believes it. And there's that percentage that says abdominal surgery, they slipped him some fentanyl or, you know, they slipped him propofol plus acupuncture. There was something else.
I have no idea.
I hate to say I'm a doubter, but I have a healthy skepticism.
Well, I think that's a healthy concept.
Yes.
What was in the air in that room?
What was going on? Hey, we're about ready to go to break. Dale, was that helpful for you?
Thank you. That was very helpful.
All right. Take care, my friend. Bye-bye.
Oh, you're listening to Leading Edge Medicine in the studio, in the hot seats today. We have Dr. Samiri Umat, Dr. Jerry Mixon, and Dr. Michael Gilbert. We're going to talk about eyes and some of those things coming up and some of those new things. And maybe you're wanting to know what's the difference between what are those letters? RLE and cataract surgery.
I do have a new thing.
Oh, Dr. Gilbert has a new thing.
Some real and some coming.
Okay. Stay right there. We're going to talk about that. And then, Ken, we'll get to your call as well. This is Leading Edge Medicine. We'll be right back. Celebrating Veterans Day today. Hope you're here. Thank you for your service if you're listening today. Oh, glad to be here with Dr. Jerry Mixon, Dr. Samiri Umat, and Dr. Michael Gilbert of Northwest Vision Institute. And we love bringing in the specialty doctors to talk about things that occasionally we'll get questions for. People want to know about all sorts of things. So this is your day if you have questions. And Dr. Gilbert, you were saying there's something new happening in your field.
We have a newer surgery in the clinic I'd like to mention sometime, but yesterday I was reading about an advance that just blew me away. I talked to my retina colleague in the practice, and he said, that'll be a game changer. Actually, I used those words first, but we both agree. So
what is it?
The last phone call that came to me through the morning program was on macular degeneration. And many people know now that the leading treatment for macular degeneration, wet macular degeneration, is a miracle drug class, anti-VEGF therapy, that oftentimes shrinks and reverses components of the vision loss from the pathologic blood vessels that are rapidly destroying vision. But that therapy typically requires monthly injections in the eye. And Lynette, you know about those injections, but people with MAC for a different reason.
Yes.
But people with macular degeneration, active wet macular degeneration, have to have those injections every 4, 6, 8 weeks. Sometimes they can extend it, but then they end up having to go back to the monthly eye injection. So it preserves your vision as long as you'll get those monthly injections. And I know that we have listeners who are getting those monthly injections. Mm-hmm. So how cool would a gene therapy be where with one injection, it alters internal production of this drug? So the gene actually tweaks the cells so that they'll produce the anti-VEGF drug intraocularly, and so far as they're entering phase 3 trials, the benefit has extended up to 3 years.
Wow.
And we don't know how long it's going to last. So,
okay.
Of course, this is still in trials. We're still, you know, current treatment if you have macular degeneration. would still be the monthly injections. Okay. And fortunately, there are new drugs coming out that last longer and more effective. So there are many, many advances coming in that area. But I think, you know, there's evolutionary change and there's revolutionary change. And to have gene therapy that would allow us to treat the disease instead of just the swelling and the local damage to reverse some of that would be a game changer.
Mm. And if it's lasting for 3 years.
Whoa. 3 years.
You know,
One shot every 3 years?
Well, that's how long they followed them so
That's
far.
Right. They just have it.
It might be 4, 5, 6, 8, 10, 12. Who
it
knows?
Could.
Okay.
We don't know.
Right. So,
you know,
very
at
exciting.
At least 3 years.
It worries me that the feds, as they tinker with good intention, try to change affordability of drugs.
No,
because of course they'll disincentivize those who really want to change the world.
Mm-hmm.
They want to get rich, probably, but they also want to change the world.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to make sure we don't take away the incentives to do that. But now we're drifting to politics instead of just.
Well, and you know, the average American. I loved a description. He said, the average American, everybody believes that they are simply a temporarily embarrassed millionaire. You know, it's just we all believe we have the potential to become millionaires. We just haven't gotten there quite yet.
Welcome to America.
Yeah.
You know. Oh, so, boy.
I'm going to write that down. Temporarily embarrassed millionaire.
Wow.
That's
okay. Okay, then that's good. All right, and what else is happening in the eye department?
Oh, do I get to talk more stuff?
Yes, come on, tell us about it.
So it's better to say treatment than surgery, isn't it?
Go.
It
yes.
sounds friendlier.
Procedure.
So we talk about how to change the prescription. Many people want to change the prescription in their eyes and get out of the hassle of glasses and contacts. And there is a technology that's been around for a while called an ICL, implantable contact lens. It actually stands for implantable collamer lens, which refers to the polymer itself that's uniquely able to do this. But it's an implantable contact lens for all effects and purposes.
Hmm.
The remarkable advance is that in the earliest form of that, you had to make some extra laser surgeries and change the eye to protect it. So the advance has been a reconfiguration of this lens, so we don't have to do any of that. You just slide it in, and it is it takes over from the wear of contacts. Now, that would be particularly useful for patients under 50.
Okay.
Who still have functional natural lenses.
Okay.
At 50, RLE, which also has seen major advances, really is the preferable treatment. Because by doing RLE, we can not only fix the distance vision, but increasingly get a range of vision. And one of the latest generation, Jerry, you know, when crystal lens was the cutting edge lens,
right? Did it, yeah.
And my brother had, let me think, do I have his permission to HIPAA him? I think so.
That took
so I, it was the lens that I used in my brother about the same time
oh,
as
wow.
you had yours. And great concept lens. However, you have to have the muscles, and not everyone's willing to do the exercises. Sometimes that fades and loses some of its effectiveness. So the latest generation implant does not require the muscular innervation to activate the function of that lens. And instead, it's built into the optics. So that improves the predictability of the lens and also the stability of the functionality of being able to see distance, intermediate, and some near vision. So the whole reason that RLE is talked about, refractive lens exchange, is that we're able to do those changes at younger and younger ages. I had mine done in my 50s. And I wear my glasses because I just look better in them. I love my teal and coral.
I know, staring at them today.
Right. Aren't they cool?
They are quite
cool
attractive.
Cool pair of glasses.
When I get on an airplane and a stewardess says, cool glasses. And there is no other reason an attractive young woman is going to say anything to me. So the fact that my glasses get them to say cool glasses, I'm thinking, I'm going to go without these things.
Yeah.
But anyone who sees me in clinic knows I don't wear my glasses
That's right.
all day long. So I wear them for fun rather than need. And so for those who need glasses, it's a world of difference to have the freedom to say, yeah, today's a glasses day, rather than, uh-oh, I can't get out of bed because my glasses have fallen from
on the floor.
Right?
Where
and Lynette,
they?
You know what that's like,
yes.
right?
And you,
oh.
and then you step on the darn things.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And some of us have been there. So
yes.
We're having more and more people coming in and wanting to talk about RLE, refractive lens exchange. The coolest part of that is once we've changed that, at whatever age you choose to do it and have patients in their 30s and 40s. I actually, the youngest RLE I did was 22.
Wow.
Wow, yeah.
And I don't generally recommend it for less than age 50, but I have many patients where it's the best option. It really is the treatment that if you're going to do something. And, the you know, for someone to come to me in their 20s, with a high prescription that can only be treated with that technology, it's amazing. It's truly life-changing.
Oh, I bet. Yeah. Yes.
And the fact that he's 22 doesn't mean that he's going to have more surgery down line. That implant undoubtedly is going to last his lifetime.
Mm.
And, you know, another step of cool technology, you might ask the question, and many do, well, can I, if something better comes along, can I have it changed out? The answer is yes, but it may be the wrong question, because there is another unapproved but very exciting technology is a laser that can make adjustment to the optics, the implant optics inside the eye without changing it. So someone who has multifocal and doesn't like it, it can be reversed. Someone who doesn't have, who has an older lens and wants to alter it, it can be adjusted with the laser. So
wow.
So some amazing, cool leaps in technology.
Very much so. Today is your day. If you have questions about the eyes, maybe you've thought about doing RLE, what Dr. Gilbert was talking about. Perhaps you've got cataracts, glaucoma, or the macular degeneration, and you've got questions. You don't quite understand what's going on, or you would like to know more. Today is your day to call in 800-465-8770, and we'll take your calls. Headed to Kirkland now, not too far away. We have Ken on the line. Hi there, Ken. Welcome to the show.
Hello, Ken.
Good morning. Hey, I've had some surgery recently closed with glue. And I understand that there was a hormone cream that you could use if you're a real vain person.
Yep.
To reduce the appearance of the scar.
Yes.
And I just wondered if you could run through that real quick.
And I wouldn't say you have to be a real vain person. I'd just say you don't want a big, ugly scar.
There you go.
There are no pretty scars.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you a story about my scars one day. But, the estrogen creams. And I have used this for decades. Even guys that have great big surgeries, they crack their chest to do the open heart, bypass surgeries. And if you have your doctor write a dilute estrogen cream, as soon as the skin is closed so that you're not actually putting it in the wound, you can simply apply a thin film of this estrogen cream twice a day. Estrogen is an incredibly potent anti-inflammatory. And so it decreases the inflammatory reaction and the fibrosis that results in those great big red ugly scars.
Yeah.
And with estrogen cream applied to the wound on a twice a day basis until it's totally healed, many people get scars you can barely see. So, you know, this is why young women scar much better than young men. Testosterone actually increases scarring.
Mm. Oh, wow.
Okay, because it makes strong fibrous tissue to hold things together.
Wouldn't it make the chest hair grow over the scar?
But it's big and red and ugly, yeah. So we get big manly scars. Oh. And if we don't want them, we put a little estrogen on
them. Okay.
Okay. Yeah, question then. The surgeon wants me to not do anything with it until the glue delaminates from the skin surface.
And that'll take a couple of weeks. Yeah, that takes a couple of weeks. But it's still fine. The scar will not be mature for a year. You'll get about 90% of the tensile strength of the wound in about 30 days. But then the rest of it comes in very slowly. But as soon as that glue delaminates, you just add that little bit of estrogen cream twice a day, and it'll help.
Very good.
All right.
Ken. Thank you so much, sir, for the call.
Bye.
We're going to take our break here at the top of the hour. Here's the number to call with your questions, 800-465-8770. Lines are open for you. Leading Edge Medicine will be right back.